Are you reading the article now?
The article for what?
I sent you the article in... Okay, granted it was the middle of the night because of the time difference.
Right.
But there was an article to read. There's homework to read prior to today's episode. Did you read it?
Absolutely not. I didn't know there was homework. Oh, okay. I'm in my email now. It says show topic. Is that what we're talking about?
Coincidentally, yes. Yeah.
Well, could you make it any more confusing?
Show topic.
Shutterbugs tread lightly in Toronto parks. That's the one?
Yeah, go ahead and read it, and we'll just sit here and wait.
Who will?
The listeners.
Oh, we're recording.
Yeah, no, I'm going to sing. I'm going to sing a song while you listen, just to keep everybody entertained.
Okay, all right. I'm reading it now. Okay.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 the Adam from Ipanema went walking and...
All right, I'm good.
You done?
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 215 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam, Vancouver.
British Columbia, Canada.
Yes!
49th parallel.
Yes.
Roughly.
Okay, I didn't know. I wasn't going to check it.
Amazon!
Yeah.
People are buying things on Amazon.
Yeah.
Through our site.
Including me.
Yeah, but I guess the bulk of this month is owed to you.
Yeah, probably. We had to send birthday presents to the niece and nephew, and they're not within driving distance, so we did it through Amazon. And then 2 days later, bada bing, bada boom, they get their presents. So
because you have the Prime, and yeah. You can send it to any Canadian address.
Yes, yes.
It's awesome. Genius. Yeah, I've done that move.
I don't think I'll ever go another route.
It's a tough route to veer away from. I've done that route. I have it here in Germany, of course. But I've done that with, again, this exact same situation you're dealing with. It's probably 2-3 hours to the niece and nephew. And I've done the exact same. All right, Amazon, here you go. Get them some books on the war or something. I don't even know what they got.
Well,
but.
That's the beauty of it. It's like literally anything you can sort of think up, you probably can find it in the way of a present, whether it's a toy, a piece of clothing, whatever. Insert whatever it is that you think
Not
they might want.
Not a hockey stick, though. Here in Germany, I'm trying to find a hockey stick. My son, who is one, just turned one a couple months ago, is showing a interest in... He doesn't know it's hockey, but it's hockey. Like, he shows that interest in it.
He stick handles his cereal.
No. It's got an old... It's actually a Swiffer. I'm not joking. He has an old Swiffer
Maybe
that we
he's
have.
Curling. Maybe curling.
It could be that or ringette. I'm not going to judge. I'm just saying. But he uses the Swiffer as a hockey stick.
Right.
For real, no jokes. So to the point where I'm like, well, I'm gonna get him a hockey stick.
No. It could be. You're in Europe. It could be field hockey.
That's just called hockey. That's the thing. Right. Is we actually okay? I'm gonna get him an ice hockey stick.
Okay.
This is upsetting to me. Is that in Germany, hockey is field hockey, and ice hockey is what we call hockey.
Right.
They have to specify that. No. It's like calling it American football.
Right.
That I get. Anyways, that's a rabbit hole, man. So the point is, I'm looking for a stick for the kid, and even on Amazon, nothing.
Really?
Well, they have, like, sticks. You can buy sticks for, like, you know, a 12-year-old to go and play on the pond, and those are, like, you know, 20, 30 bucks.
Yeah.
But I don't want that. I want something very little that he can basically, you know, ruin my basement floor with.
And you don't have, they don't have in the German Amazon, like, just the mini sticks?
I can't find it.
Really? Like, yeah. Here the mini sticks are huge, but they're not the mini sticks that we had as kids, the little plastic things that you would, that you would play on the floor of a hotel in. They're actually like one piece, like, you know, graphite, like basically just smaller right. versions of a regular ice hockey stick.
They have Wi-Fi.
But they sell for $40 or $50. And like, that's what kids play mini sticks with now. They have curves on them. Yeah. Jack has one. Yeah, no, it's a legitimate stick, but they're just miniature versions of them. So they're longer than what we had as kids as mini sticks.
So wait a second. So when they're playing at the rink, because we used to play at the rink, of course, like while someone else was playing the game, like you'd be there watching, and then of course you'd wander off and you'd play hockey up, you know, in the hallway or something.
Right.
Does his friends basically take their jacket off, turn it around, and use that to be the goalie?
Not yet. I think, well, Jack's a bit young. He's 5, so they're...
That's the wheelhouse of that. I think that's seven to eight year olds are
the jacket. Yeah, like they're, like basically when they're playing, there's not a lot of goaltending. The goaltending is very weak, but by the time you get to 7 or 8, like the jacket and the butterfly goaltending stance, that all comes into play.
They are, I'm telling you, if you're dropping, you know, 50 ducats on a plastic stick...
Yeah.
Which is carbon fiber.
No, graphite.
No, I understand. Yeah. It's whatever it is. I understand. But it should be plastic.
Okay.
It should come free with like a big bag of popcorn is what it should be.
Right.
If you're dropping that kind of dinero on that, there's no way these kids are going to settle for just turning it around and playing with a jacket. They're going to have brand new pads.
Oh, there's pads. There's tournaments. We have friends, kids are a little bit older, that play mini stick tournaments. They have them, you know, a couple times a year.
Wow.
And they have them in the rink when the ice is taken out, and they have actual tournaments with these mini sticks. And it's a big thing.
We ruin everything as adults.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to just tell my kids, here, go do this. You can't find a ball. Play with some broken glass, man. Just smash it around and try. Don't like keep your eyes out of the way.
Right.
But some of the lousier kids, just go ahead, get it in their face. It doesn't matter.
Right.
We do you not miss that? I mean, this seems to be every generation whines about how it used to be awesome. It wasn't awesome. It sucked. But it was awesome in how much it sucked.
Right. I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I miss it. Like tennis balls were hard to come by. It wasn't like you couldn't go. There was no dollar store when I was a kid.
Right.
So you wanted a tennis ball, you had to basically steal it from somebody, which I'm fine with.
Okay.
Now you 3D print them in your basement.
Right.
Anyways.
Okay. All right. Is that your rant for this week?
No, I got plenty.
Okay.
I got plenty.
Just get warmed
up. Hey, are you using Lightroom yet?
No. To be honest, I haven't.
Okay. I need you to make that a priority.
I know. And every weekend I sort of say to myself, all right, because my free preview or whatever, 30-day preview expired. Mm-hmm. And I just honestly haven't gotten around to it. And, yep. And then I said, okay, when February starts, I'll do it and I'll start fresh February. Now I'm in the middle of February. I'm like, all right, I'll just do it at the end of February, but I will make it a priority and do it this week. And I will I haven't been taking a ton of photos. And so then I've kind of been like, ho-ha on the, okay, I'll start Lightroom next week.
So, I don't know what took me so long. Honestly.
And I don't know what's taking me again.
And I'm behind. Like you're on like Lightroom 5 or something. I think I can't even run 5. I'm on 4 and it is awesome.
Yeah.
From
what I tried for the 30 days, I loved it and then just didn't get around to it. Yeah.
But it's one of those things. But now you're basically importing your photos into Aperture. And so now you're going to have things spread across two different places. You need a clean break.
I know. That's why I just need to do it. I just need to do it. Because nothing in the last 2 months, like there might be 10 photos that I bring across. Like it's been photo challenges and a little bit of stuff on the side, but not a heck of a lot. So it won't be too hard for me to transfer over what I want to keep from the last, from January, February.
Right. That's essentially what I did mid end of January, I think, is when I made the transition. And so I was able to bring 100 photos over.
Yeah.
And then go from there, and I haven't looked back. So I Aperture does not get a lot of playing time right now.
Okay.
So there's that. I'm loving it. I want to talk a little bit about a movie I worked on.
Okay.
I talked about it about a year ago, a little over a year ago. I started working more than that even, but I started talking about it about a year ago. I was working on a documentary. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, I wasn't working on it anymore, or at least I wasn't talking about it.
Okay.
Well, the good news is, I'm not even 100% sure, just from what I've read, that movie's at the Berlin Film Festival right now.
Cool.
Which is a big, like, Berlin's one of the big ones.
Right. Were they going to tell you?
I didn't end up editing the movie.
You didn't?
No, I got, I would say fired, but I don't know if I got fired. I mean, I got fired in that, like, okay, she stopped calling. Like, the producer actually is a guy. He stopped phoning and stopped paying me, and so I quit editing. Like, and so in that respect, I didn't end up editing the movie.
And you stopped getting paid. So yeah, I'd say that's a clean break.
I wish it was but here's the thing. Okay, here's the story. I sat down with the director after working for, 5-6 months, whatever it was. I ended up was hired on as an editor, but the project wasn't ready to be cut yet. Like, they were still shooting. The story hadn't been done. The director, who's a good guy, I have no problem with the guy. I'm not ripping on him at all. He didn't handle this great, that's for sure. But regardless, he brought me on as an editor, and then we started talking about the project, and it became very, very clear that a lot more writing needed to be done.
Okay.
Like, because we had to go back years, like 12 plus years of court documents and whatnot, to basically establish this story and write this whole. It's a very fascinating story about a guy named Martin Armstrong, who, if you're into financial stuff, you know who he is. He's basically predicts the markets and does a very good job of it, and okay. He ended up going to jail. For whatever reason, that's just go watch the movie. I encourage you to watch the movie when it comes out. It's called The Forecaster.
Okay.
So anyways, so it became very clear that a lot of writing needed to be done. And so that's what I kind of was shifted onto. You know, the director said, hey, listen, I need you to go through this and write the story. And I did. And I sifted through years and years of court documents and whittled that down itself to about 20 minutes to build a script of 20 minutes to sort of compress all of that. And then we're going to build out, you know, the rest of the story. That was the next step, but we weren't there yet. And so there was deadlines that had to happen and blah, blah, blah. And so I worked and worked and worked, and it became very clear that we weren't ready to keep going on this.
Okay.
So I sat down with the director and I could see the look on his face, and he's like, and I said, listen, you got to fire me. No, I don't want to fire you. I want you on this movie. And I said, well, like the way it's going, I see the writing on the wall. You've been working on this project for 12 years. This is your project. You've brought me in. I think I love the story. I think I would be very good at telling the story. But you're so invested. This is your thing, and you're not ready for me. When you're ready for me, fine, let me know. But for now, you have to fire me. And he said, no, just 1 month. I need 4 weeks to get everything, and then you're back.
Okay.
That was 12 months ago. Yeah. But I knew it. I'm not stupid. I saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah, okay? But why don't you think he contacted you after the 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whenever he was ready to keep going?
Well, there was an incident.
Are you gonna bring that to light, or?
Yeah, sure. No, I'll tell you. We butted heads on something.
Okay.
On the story. On the story. And he basically, because this is a documentary, but it is, but it's got a cinematic feel to it in the way it was shot and the way the story plays out. Like, it really is an amazing story. And it's wildly intricate. So we had to leave a lot of it out. So, like, I haven't seen the movie yet. But I think it's playing at like an hour and 40 minutes, which it could play. It honestly could play as a 6 or 8 hour miniseries.
Right.
But this called for 100 minutes. And so that means you have to leave a bunch of stuff out. But anyway, it's a very intricate story. And so he said, hey, listen, you know what? I want to open this in a real cinematic fashion. How do you think we should do that? And I said, oh, this is how I would do it. Okay. Well, no, I don't like that. Okay, I said, well, here's another option. Here's something else I would do. Boom. No, I don't like that. What about this? He says, wow, how about we open it like this? And I say, I would not do that. I have to advise that I think that is a terrible idea. Because I gave him my opinion.
Right.
And it turns out that people don't always want your opinion.
Right. They want you to pump their tires.
Well, sometimes they want their opinion in your voice. And so I didn't care. I knew, like, I recognized that was one of the situations. But I knew I was right. And I didn't want to go and work really hard in one direction when I knew that it wasn't going to work.
Right.
And the moment, now this is, I don't want to give this away because it might be a spoiler. I haven't seen how he ended up cutting it. I'm hoping he cut it how I suggested, story-wise. You know, like what reveals when? Like, at what point in the movie do you reveal a plot point? You know, like he wanted to open with it, and I said, no, this has to come at, you know, minute 50, because it will be a giant gasp in the theater.
Right.
I guarantee you, this will be, no one will see this coming, it'll be a wow moment. You can't open with it, because it takes all the air out of it.
Right, yeah.
He disagreed with me, and things got pretty heated that one night, and I sucked to my guns. I said, like, I'm not going to fight you, but, like, not physically, I meant, but fight you on this, but I disagree, like, this is not the way to do it. And then the next day we had the hey, you're fired conversation, where I offered to be fired.
Right.
And then he ended up cutting it himself, which is what he should have done in the first place. Because he was so close to this story. It was so personal for him.
Yeah.
And so then that was the way. And now I know from reviews, I've read some reviews on the movie, and I haven't seen the movie, but I know that he didn't open it the way he said he was going to. So in the end, I was right.
Okay.
In the end, I'm not at the Berlin Film Festival.
Right.
And I think this movie has a pretty good chance of going to Cannes, too.
Wow.
Which would be nice for me. It would be nice if a movie I edited would be at the Cannes Film Festival. That would probably be a good career move. I could basically stop being friends with you.
Right.
Because I'm assuming Clooney and Pitt would actually want to hang out now instead of that restraining order they got.
Right. Right.
No, but in all honesty, I think this movie, just based on what it's about, and this goes to this guy, Martin Armstrong, and I ended up meeting the guy last year in Switzerland, and I went down, and I actually shot the way the photo ties into this, because we're a photo podcast.
Oh, I forgot for 15 minutes.
Yeah. I ended up shooting the photo for the poster.
Yeah.
So the poster I shot is, I mean, it's been Photoshopped since then. It looks pretty cool, actually. I'm pretty impressed with what they did with it. But I shot his portrait for the poster that's now at the Berlinale, which is, you know, I'm kind of, you know, thrilled with that.
Do you get a credit for that or anything?
No.
Probably not.
No. I mean, hey, who shot the picture for Pulp Fiction? You don't know. Like, no one knows. That's what my wife said. She's like, well, did you give you credit? I'm like, well, no one ever gets credit for that.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I could probably use it on my resume, but, you know, and I ended up getting, I think I'm credited in the movie as an assistant editor.
Well, that's, yeah, that was kind of what I was wondering too.
Depending on the cut, like, I want to see the cut, depending on what he went with, I should have gotten a writer credit, but I think they cut out a lot of the backstory, so that would not be an issue. I wouldn't cry about that. So I am credited, but that's a heads up. But when the movie comes out, when you can see it, it's called The Forecaster as of now. I think it's probably still going to be called that because he's forecasting markets and wars and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Based on the number pi. And in fact, there was a rumor that there was a movie that came out like 15 plus 17 years ago called Pi. Do you remember that movie?
I remember The Life of Pi.
No, way before that. There's a black and white movie.
I remember American Pie.
No. This is not. I meant American Graffiti. That's what I'm talking about. No. It's the director, and I can't think of his name offhand. The guy who directed, Darren Aronofsky.
Sure. Yes, I know. He's done a lot of stuff. He did The Wrestler.
There you go. But see, his first movie, he made an independent movie called Pie, which
he did
the rumor was
Requiem for a Dream.
Correct.
Yeah, I can name other pie things too. I like pie a la mode.
I just like the alamode and cinnamon. So he made this movie called Pi, based on, well, the rumor was that it was based on Martin Armstrong.
Okay.
This guy from New Jersey, right? And so I don't know if that's true or not. However, the irony being that this documentary is in Berlin right now, and the head of the jury happens to be Darren Aronofsky.
Okay.
So I thought that was pretty cool. I don't think they're going to market that as much as they should. But that I thought that was kind of a quirky little fact.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, point being is that it's going to show on TV here in Europe. I have to find out when. Google it. The trailer's online. You can see the trailer, and not all. I think the end, basically the end, when you see the credits come up, that's the photo I shot. So that's how it ties in. Make it about me.
You didn't shoot the poster for the wrestler, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a good poster.
That's hand drawn. I drew that by hand.
And great movie, by the way. Have you seen that?
I have seen that.
Love that movie. Love that movie.
It's a good one. So anyway, that's a heads up on the movie I worked on. So despite, I actually don't have a bad taste in my mouth with how it all went down. My wife is upset for some reason, thinks it should have gone differently. I'm not too worried about it. I can't wait to see the movie, and I encourage everybody else to also go and see it when you can, when it comes to film festivals.
Great. So,
yeah, I anticipate it playing in Toronto as well and in September, and I'll be very surprised if it doesn't play at the Vancouver Film Festival in October, because the former premier of the province, you know, Gordon Campbell?
Yes.
His brother Michael, who's on TV in British Columbia, he's in the movie.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's a connection there. There's a Vancouver connection. So I really expected to play at the Vancouver Film Festival as well.
Great. We'll look for it. We'll look for it here.
Awesome. And just yell out, hey, shouldn't have fired him.
Yeah.
Two posers.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Don't do that. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Actually, I did. I did this week. I shot headshots for my sister-in-law.
Yeah, I saw those. Those are great.
I was really happy with how it turned out. Also, first time doing it. It's one of those things that's just never come up. It's doing a business headshot has just never come up. So she asked. I think she's getting some kind of award through her work, and she said, "Oh, hey, will you do a picture for me?" And I said, "Sure." So did a little bit of like my typical research. Went on Google Images and looked at what a typical women business headshots look like, got in my head sort of the idea, and then put it together in my living room with the gray background paper and a couple of lights and a reflector and the whole deal. But had fun doing it. She tried different color combinations and we got some really, really nice photos. I put a couple of them up on Facebook just to show my two favorites anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I would easily be able to reproduce this now having done it. Like, I think and Darlene last week made some, you know, good feedback about, you know, in portraits and contrast and what you might be looking for. So I paid a lot of attention to that detail in a business headshot. Like, obviously you don't want it to be too much contrast with the lighting, right? So you want to make it look like it's natural light. But of course, we shot this at 8 o'clock at night, and this time of year, there was no natural light available. So I had to do the best I could with sort of studio lighting, but trying to make it look natural.
Do the best I could with the professional studio lighting I have.
Yeah. But I mean, but to make it look as natural as possible, I didn't want to make it look too sort of fashion studio. Didn't want to give any of that look. I wanted to make it look as natural as possible. Trying to make it look evenly lit without being completely evenly lit, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the reflector and everything kind of, I think the final setup I used was the studio strobe and then a reflector to fill in, like really close range, both the studio light in a giant softbox that I have, and then the reflector, both in close range to keep the light really soft on her, and then a flash on a stand right behind her back, pointing into the photo paper to create sort of like, you know, a nice kind of gradient light, so sort of separates her from the background and really draws attention to her without trying to rim light her. So that, yeah, that's what we went with. And I was worried about the rim lighting just because you talked about it in the past when you did a headshot for a realtor. And just if the hair's not perfect, then the rim lighting on, you know, a female's hair completely shows every little strand. And I didn't want to spend hours photoshopping the little bits of frizz out of her hair. So I was like, all right, not backlighting. And then I just went
especially
with
this time of year.
Yeah.
Like this is static electricity time of year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And even in the way I did it, there were still a few little frizzes that I had to clean up still. But
like,
yeah,
I generally, whenever the girl comes over and wants a headshot, I'm like, let's just shoot you under the shower. Which gets awkward.
Yeah. So anyways, they're on Facebook. I encourage people to check them out because I was really pleased with the results.
Mm-hmm. They look good. It's funny. I also shot some headshots of a female friend of mine last week. Didn't talk about it because we didn't have time, nor do we have time now.
Right.
But it's just funny. We both shot those professional headshots in the same week.
And what was your setup?
Oh, better than yours.
Okay. All right.
No, what specifically? Yeah. No, I actually went for a darker background. I've shot pictures for her before, and I just decided that, you know what, I'm going to shoot with like a darker gray. It's very similar to the shots I shot of my son the week prior. I used that same background and was like, yeah, that's kind of what I'm going to go for, but in a more professional headshot situation.
Right.
And but the reason I bring it up is it was funny because, you know, like this is a delicate subject with, especially with females, unfortunately. You know, I deal with it with guys too, but not as much. When you get to be a certain age, you get laugh lines.
Sure.
Which is a nice way to put it. And I can see your sister-in-law, you know, she's not 11.
Right.
She's not old by any means, nor does she look old, but there is that, you know, when she smiles, she has those lines around her mouth and her eyes. And I don't mind that at all. Like, I embrace that.
Right.
You know, in women.
Sure.
That aren't my wife.
Right.
But I sat down with, you know, the subject of mine, and we photoshopped a little bit of that out.
Okay.
And we kind of smoothed things out, but I said to her, listen, like, I don't want to go crazy on this. I don't want to make you look plastic. I want to smooth it out a little, smooth the bumps out a little bit, but I'm going to leave some in. So it's interesting to kind of know how much to leave in.
Right.
And how much to leave out. And she basically has the very similar kind of thing, like the shadows around the mouth when she smiles. And you can avoid that by not just having your subject not smile.
Right.
But I like the smile.
Yeah.
So I encourage it anyways and say, you know what? Don't worry about that. Smile, get the line, move on.
Right.
Did you have to deal with any photoshopping?
Not really, other than, like I say, a tiny little bit of hair, hair frizz. So
she was cool with the laugh lines that she's earned.
Oh yeah, and I mean, we both looked at the images close up too, and yeah, no, I like it. And again, it looks natural. Like I don't think most people, like myself included, like I don't want to have the imperfections like photoshopped out, like, because again, I'm against that in every way. Like, I mean, make the light flattering, but I don't like the idea of, you know, making people look like something they're not.
Right.
It's just a personal issue with that. Like, again, what's message is that sending my kids is kind of the way I look at it. Like, it's a horrible message. It's a horrible message. And I get it for the one bride shot. Like, I get a little bit. And where the lines get pretty blurry, right? But, like, a hair imperfection is something that could have been brushed out. Like, it's not changing who they are. But, like I say, changing wrinkles and, I don't know, anything like that, like a birthmarks or whatever. Like, I don't get that. I don't see the need for it, personally.
My attitude has always been, if it's a temporary thing, like a pimple or something like that, yes,
absolutely,
gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If there's a little mark, something like that, I'm all for, because that's not there all the time.
Chocolate? With the kids? Sure. Or with the kids, honestly, it's like, okay, great. They have snot or chocolate or both. Ew.
Yeah.
I'll get rid of that. Occasionally, there's some kids who just always have snot, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm done with this. You know, wipe your kid's nose now, please.
Yeah. But the line thing, like, especially with eyes, like, to me, that is an indication of where you are at in your life. And I still think that, you know, people, men and women, look just fine with a few crinkles around their eyes. And like, mm-hmm. I've done it before where I've played around with what it looks like when you take them out. It looks completely fake.
It can. It mostly does. I will do a slight smoothing, but definitely leave some in. Like there's no way, you know. And some of it is, well, perhaps I could have spent a little more time on the fill lighting to just kind of decrease the contrast under their eyes a little bit. Maybe I didn't have time for that, and that could be on me.
Yeah.
But you're right. The lines get blurry, and at what point do you stop? You know, I had a mom when I took pictures of her for 4-day-year-old kid. And she said, you know what, can you kind of Photoshop his ears? They're kind of pointy at the top, and he looks a bit like an elf. And I said, no.
Yeah.
No, you know, because like one day he's going to work for Santa, that's for sure. Right. But I said, no, he's going to grow out of it. And then you're going to be upset that you didn't have this. I mean, you want this. You don't want a picture. Like, why don't I just give you a picture of my kid? Here you go. Have that one.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want.
Yes, I agree. So, but yeah, no, I think that's an issue that, you know, obviously you have to cater to your client. So if this is paid work and they're saying, okay, I want it to look like this, I'm not going to fight them on it either, right? Like
I will suggest, though, as evidenced by my previous story with the editing, I will put a draw a line in the sand, and my kids will starve. So evidently, I'm kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
No, but I do point that out and say, listen, I will do this. I'll do as much as you want, but let's go light on this, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. So I shot some interesting stuff. We're right in the middle of something called fashing.
Okay.
Which is essentially carnival here, but it's a little different thing. We'll talk about it next week. How about that?
Yes.
There's more. We shot some yesterday, shot some today. There's going to be more tomorrow and then again on Tuesday, which is Fat Tuesday. And then Ash Wednesday, not so much. And so we'll talk about it next week.
I can't wait to talk about it next week. Yeah.
I know. I think Amber is going to be on the show as well. And so she said, hey, more fashion talk. Or fastnets, as they say here, right here in the South.
Okay.
So, and the winter sun showed up. So that's been exciting.
Great.
Photo challenge, finally.
Yes.
Panning. This was issued by Darlene. You know, I should mention quickly from last week, Darlene was gracious enough to for our listeners to offer a 25% discount on all of her workshops.
Nice.
Her online workshops. And so I posted that last week. She mentioned it after the show, so it didn't make it in the final edit. So that's why I should bring it up now, right here in the middle where no one's listening.
Yeah.
But if you enter the promo code 25hosers, 25% off.
Wow,
for the hosers.
Wow, we're big time.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Then, 25% off of everything. And that's a limited time offer. I don't know. It's limited to however long they keep it going. So I don't know what that date is.
Jump on it if you're interested.
I'm assuming like in the year 2100, it probably won't be available. I'm just,
right.
Maybe.
Maybe hit that in the next couple months.
But if you're thinking about going for the video, the lighting workshop, 25% off. There you go. So check it out. And then she suggested this week's photo challenge for panning.
Right.
We've done this, haven't we?
I don't know if we have.
I think we talked about it or something.
I think we talked about it. I'm not sure I ever done it.
Didn't you do it in Photoshop originally?
We did what was called like a... it was a Photoshop trick where you take you kind of blur around it. I can't remember what it was called. I saw it in a magazine and then we did it.
Right.
And, yeah, but I don't think we actually did it this way.
No. I think I did do mine this way. And then I don't know. I'm drawing a blank myself. So, but this week is panning. That's what we're going to talk about on the photo challenge. Let's talk about your basketball one first.
Okay. So,
was the one you submitted, and this came through, and I thought, looked at this, and I went, wow, I win.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible photo, but I wanted to include it because it sort of brings to light how difficult doing this kind of panning shot can be, given certain scenarios. So last night, myself and the kids and my wife went to the Harlem Globetrotters were in town, so I thought, perfect, like, you know, this is a good opportunity. We're going to have good seats and we're going to go to the Globetrotters and I'm going to try to take a photo when someone's, you know, they do a lot of dunking the basketball and tricks and all the rest of it. I'm going to get a Harlem Globetrotters panning shot, right? How hard could this be?
Well, turns you're just out, sitting there. It's easy.
Turns out really hard.
Wait a second. What lens did you have?
I had a 85 mil in my full frame camera. Okay. And so I just thought, and the reason I thought, oh, okay, I could bring a longer lens, I could bring a wider lens. I just thought I'm going to bring the 85 mil and I don't know how hard can this be? 10, 15 shots. I should have something exactly the way I want it. So yeah, they dunked the basketball a lot and I sort of would pre-focus on the basket and then played around with different shutter speeds, anywhere from 1/15th of a second to about 1/60th of a second. And then just tried to, you know, do as I sort of had read online to kind of track along and try to keep the camera moving at the speed of my subject. And it turns out everything that I took was terrible and nothing kind of achieved the panning effect. Usually what I got was just a whole bunch of blurry streak lines where you wouldn't know what it was. And so I got the one picture that I put up there where you can sort of tell what's going on. Still a terrible image, and I tried to white balance it, which was impossible. Like the weird colored lighting in the Pacific mm-hmm. Coliseum was just, again, couldn't get white balance. But I knew if I put it in black and white, you'd kind of lose the fact that it was even the Harlem Globetrotters, because they have obviously a very unique color scheme. So I thought, all right, I'll just do a completely terrible photo. And so I put it up there. But I had taken earlier in the week a panning photo with the remote control car, and my son was driving it, and I did a panning shots just out front of our house, and got something right. That was more the effect.
Way better.
Wasn't in love with the photo, but at least it achieved the panning effect.
You're on to something with this though.
What's that?
No, with your car, like you are on the right path to getting something awesome that's going to be a poster for your son's wall.
Well, there you go.
No, that's going to be... This isn't it.
You're right. No, I know. But, I know, I mean, it's not worry, it.
You can go ahead. No, you can go ahead with the basketball. You can stop that. Don't go down that path.
Yeah, and I don't You're know good. Why. Like, I don't know why... Like, this There's is a lot so going hard.
On. We should talk about panning on a separate show, on how to do this. But basically, by looking at this picture, as soon as I saw it, I thought, okay, A, it's not good. I know you don't think it's good. I'm not suggesting that you were sort of saying, hey, I'm rad, check this out. But just the circumstances, the way this was shot, I'm like, you're setting yourself up for failure. This is really a difficult situation to get a good result. You can't do it.
How come though? Why not?
There's a lot of things going on, but a lot of it is the movement that it relative to the background, like your distance from you to the subject versus the subject to the background, like those things are out of whack, and so that therefore it becomes difficult to get a sharp image on him and still convey motion. That there's just not enough variance.
He's not moving fast enough. Is that the problem?
He's not moving far enough relative to the background.
I see.
And so that's a function of you are farther away from him than he is from those other people, or pretty close to the same distance.
Yeah, I'm probably a little further away because this is cropped too.
Right. It would. Yeah. I'm assuming it would have to be with the 85.
Yeah.
So consequently, like I said, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Right.
But we'll learn how to do that better. But you don't have to. You obviously know what you're doing on the next one.
Yeah, I realized that I would never do this again. And after trying about 20 times, I wasn't even close. Like, I knew I wasn't even close, so I just put the camera away. I was like, "That's it. I'm done."
You probably would have achieved better results with the 200 mil lens. With 70 to 200.
And that was my initial thought, was I was going to bring it, and then I thought, I don't want to be that guy. I just didn't want to be that guy.
No, you don't want to be that guy.
Like, just at the Globetrotters game with my long lens, looking like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm important. I'm doing this for the Two Hosers photo challenge.
That's right, with my shirt on.
Yeah, so yeah, I just called it. I called it, and I said I'm going to the safety image, which was the remote control,
which
car.
Is much better. There's a lot going on here. It ties in with one of our listeners who also posted a remote control blur shot, like a panning shot.
Nice. Yep.
I like what's going on here. I mean, there's a lot that's going on that doesn't need to be going on, which essentially is the car bumpers and stuff like that. If you get in tighter, you're really close to getting a great shot that to print out and put in your son's wall that he's going to love, like that essentially none of his friends' dads could take. Like that's
the funny thing is I cropped this photo tighter to see, mm-hmm. and then I didn't feel like, I mean, it's a better picture, I agree, but as far as the panning effect, yeah, the cars really help show the motion, because it almost then just becomes like, hey, I could have just done that with the 200 millimeter lens on an f5, and I probably could have got a better image, right? Like, I could have blurred the background, and so to me, it was like I needed to include the bottom of those cars in order to convey the panning effect. So, yeah, it was one of
those
things.
In this photo, yes. In this photo, absolutely, you need that context. But, you know, moving forward, like, you might find a different place to do this, make a bigger puddle, maybe even more blur with the puddle. I don't know. Like, and because the water spinning on those wheels looks awesome.
Yeah. I kind of thought if I get a wet day at the skate park because of all the graffiti and just a better background, I thought this photo would be better at the skate park with just more color and background. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I will give it a go again, but it is still unbelievably frustrating because, again, I'm lying on the cement, like having my son race the car back and forth through puddles trying to do this, and still, this is a 1 in 10 kind of hit-to-miss ratio.
Oh, is it that low?
It might be 1 in 20. I didn't take that many. I probably took about 25, and I probably had two usable. So, somewhere in the 1 in 10, 1 in 15 range,
No, I like what's going on here with the reflections and all that stuff, and like I said, this isn't the one, but man, you're close. And like, this is something that I would keep doing. Like, I mean, he's going to love driving the car. He'll probably get tired of you bossing him around, but
yeah, that's what he's like, come on, dad.
Yeah. Boss of me. Like, yes, I am the boss of you.
Yeah. And I tried to do it with jumps too. And then gave up. I tried to do it with some flash because I thought, okay, if I add a little flick of flash, it might help freeze it better. But again, still wasn't hitting the mark. So
yeah.
It was fun and frustrating all at the same time.
It's tough, but I judging by the way this was shot, you are closer to the subject than the subject is to those cars.
Yes, I'm very close on this.
Right.
One.
And so in that relative distance will make up for you're able to keep the wrestler in relative focus and relative sharpness and blur the background. That's kind of what you're looking at. So
okay. Now, how about yours?
I took two. I took two. This is the second of two photos because the train only comes by every 15 minutes.
Okay.
And thus, I was like, all right, if I don't have it now, I don't care. I'm tired of this. But no, I set this up on purpose. I struggled for a long time because I was like, you know what? There's nothing around my general area. There's nothing that's going to be visually interesting. In terms of cars panning, like I'm going to be forced to phone this one in, which I may have done anyways. I don't know, but I thought, hey, wow, what don't we have in Canada? Really, we don't have these sort of commuter trains outside of Toronto, I suppose.
Yeah, Toronto has them. Yeah,
I mean, we have SkyTrain, but this is not the SkyTrain. This is like an overland commuter train. And it's not too far from my house. So I thought, okay, I'll wander down there. I'll get the train schedule and see how often it comes and head down there. And the winter sun finally came out. It's been a long time. It's been 4 to 6 weeks. It hasn't been horrible, but it's been horrible.
Right.
So that's what we call irony, I think. And so finally the sun came out, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. So I wanted to go kind of towards the end of the evening, so we have this low sun shining on the train, and there's this one corridor where the sun basically sets. Like, this train is driving directly into the setting sun. And it comes down this corridor of trees, so it doesn't light up the foreground and the background, and it will just light up the train only. And so I thought, oh, great. So every 15 minutes, the train goes from left to right. So every half an hour, the train goes left to right, and every other half an hour, 15 minutes apart, it goes the other direction.
Okay.
So I shot my test shot of the train going the other direction, but I wanted it to come into the light, and so waited for 15 minutes, got set, used the 70-40 F4L that I have, which I don't use very often.
Okay.
And set it to 17 mils and got up right up close to the tracks. Because I wanted the distance between me and the subject to be way closer than to the background, and just as it came along, this is what I shot. I shot one photo. Didn't blast off a bunch. It was about 1/15th of a second, and panned with the train. And this is the image. So
It's nice. I like it. I mean, I like the color. That's the thing. If this was muted colors or black and white, I could care less. But
well, I Lightroomed this. This was a lot of Lightrooming stuff that I learned from Mark Hort's videos. As a matter of fact.
Okay. Well, the color is what makes the photo completely. So mm-hmm. whatever you saturating and bringing the blues up and the gold and the blue, the colors work really nicely. And so then you pay more attention and you look at it and you're like, oh, that's a cool photo of a train. But like I say, it's the color that completely makes the photo.
It's, in my opinion, it's a good start to a photo. I don't know if I'll continue down this path. I might shoot the train somewhere else, maybe somewhere more interesting. But in my two photos I did take, the one test shot that I didn't use and this one, I did learn a lot about kind of the dynamics of what's going on. You look at the motion blur on the left-hand side. It's got kind of like a radial arc to it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a function of the 17 mil lens up close. And look at the right side of the train. That's far more blurry than the very front of the train.
Exactly, yeah.
Despite the fact that they are moving technically at the same rate of speed. Otherwise, they would just tear apart. However, relative to me, they're moving at very different speeds because there's a slight angle. And so we get into some sort of differential calculus, y equals mx plus b, that kind of thing. I don't want to get too egghead on you.
Sure.
But that's why it appears, I'm panning at the same speed, the relative speed as the front of the train, but the back of the train I'm not. I'm panning at a much slower rate because of the distance, like the angle, mm-hmm. and therefore it blurs, and it I'm panning ahead of it, so it creates its own motion blur. So I kind of got up all in my head about all the different like things that you could do with this, and then I stopped, and I was like, oh, that's enough of that. I'll just watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, because that's a good show.
Right.
So that's where I ended up. So, in the end, this isn't going on my wall.
No.
But like your photo, I think it's kind. It might be the start of something that I can waste my time with.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
Great. So
that's the photo challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Expect for anybody who hasn't tried this, expect to be frustrated.
Yes.
That's what I've kind of learned from this, is expect to fail and fail and fail and fail. And then you might see an awesome moment and be like, oh, yeah, failed again. And so...
Yeah, you have it. You look at it and go, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. Somebody phoned the press. And then you get home and look at it and you're like, no, it's terrible. I don't know what I was looking at. I must have seen my own reflection or something in the LCD screen.
Right.
Because that looked good. No. And again, we'll do a future episode on this, on what worked, what didn't, and how to go from there. But I kind of want to get a little better at it myself and get a higher success rate before I teach it.
Right. I agree.
That'd be pretty terrible. This week's topic.
Yes. I'm waiting. Bated breath.
Okay, fine. It's rights versus responsibilities.
Okay.
So I'm going to lecture you for a little bit.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
You're going to learn nothing in terms of photos taking, skills, okay. opportunities, stuff.
Right.
But I will rant and rave for a little bit.
Okay.
No, it's about one of our listeners on Twitter sent us an article from Toronto about filming and photographing in Toronto's public parks.
Right.
And how the gist of it is you can't without permission. Blanket policy. Now, you read the article, and we'll post the article for people to read. I'm interested in your thoughts on that article.
It's pretty ridiculous.
In what way?
Here's the problem with, in my opinion, with society in general. I mean, most of the things in that article, to me, are kind of like, I mean, I don't have a problem with people having a photo and my kids in the distance being in the photo. I'm okay with that. Like that mm-hmm. I don't want complete strangers walking up and just randomly, getting in my face or my kid's face and shooting a bunch of photos. Like, I expect permission in one scenario, but not in the other.
But those people have rights to take photos, Adam.
Yes, there are.
We live in a free society, and I have the right
Yeah, the problem is that that's where I think the line gets that's blurry. Like here's my way of thinking is that if you are going out in a public space where it is understandable that somebody might be taking a photo and you happen to be in their photo, then that's fine. That's on you. You're mm-hmm. you're again, but there is also sort of a line where it says there's an invasion of your personal space, which is I don't want to be part of the paparazzi target. Like, I don't want to have my privacy invaded to the point where everything I do is being photographed and I'm the subject. I think those are two very different things.
Right.
So I try to do my best as a photographer to not invade other people's personal space, right?
That's like, interesting.
So, yes.
See, now, here's what gets me. Is that, and it's not just in the photography world, but I hear it everywhere. Everybody knows their rights. But do the same people, do they know their responsibilities?
Probably not. Or maybe some people do, but not everybody.
Very few. Sure. I mean, maybe it's not even, it's probably a lot of people do know their responsibilities. But again, like everything else, it's the vocal minority who yells the loudest. And that's what we look at. Go, oh, well, you know, kids today. You know, like that kind of thing. Or, you know, put your stamp on anything that you want, you know, like anything you can add the into in front of, that's when it becomes the issue, you know, the Canadians, you know them, you know, that's when it becomes ridiculous.
I think in reading that article, like the way it basically goes over the fact that these are blurry lines, right?
This is the interesting part is later in the article, they do start to talk about that, which I found very interesting and kind of a little bit proud of the whole being Canadian. And it was a Canadian thing because they are sort of being reasonable. But I have long thought about responsibilities in life versus rights. This is a big thing with me.
Right.
Because I have always thought, not always, I wish I would, when I was young, I was kind of a jerk. But, you know, later on, when I'm less of a jerk, I've long thought that responsibilities are far more important in the fabric of society than any so-called rights. You know, and this comes down to like, one of the simplest explanations, like, simplest examples for me is when it snows.
Okay.
Like, when it snows, you, as a homeowner, you have the responsibility to shovel your sidewalk for everybody else. Now, you have the right to not do that, I suppose. But you have the responsibility to do that. Now, we could hire people to do that, but your tax bill would be outlandish. And so we just put it on everybody and say, listen, we don't want to charge everybody taxes, so it's on you guys. You have the responsibility to clear your driveway, boom, or the sidewalk in front of your house, even though it's city property.
Right.
Does everybody do that? No.
No.
No, they don't.
In photography terms, I have a recent example. We talked about it on the show where I took a photo when we went to that Remembrance Day ceremony. I took a photo of a guy who had, like, you know, a $10,000 camera set up, but he was holding up his cell phone taking a photo of the parade. Did not post that photo, talked about it, then deleted it. Because, mm-hmm. A, I don't think I did anything wrong by taking that photo. Because, again, we're in a public space. Like, I did it more or less for my own amusement. And there's cameras everywhere. So, to me, it's very likely that if you're standing at a parade and taking photos yourself, that you might be included in a photo. But mm-hmm. I did think that me posting that photo on social media, I don't know this guy. And poking fun at him in a public space seems wrong, even though I don't know him. But to me, that's wrong. That's the difference between.
But I feel like you have the right to do that.
Maybe I do have the right to do it.
You do have the right to do that. We live in a free society, Adam. You have the right to be a jerk.
I also think it's a jerk move and it's very wrong. Like that's where the responsibility part comes in. Is like, I wouldn't like that if that had been done to me. I mean, I probably wouldn't care that much, but still I'd be like, oh, that guy's a jerk,
right?
Who posted that photo. So I feel the same way. I wanted to talk about it. I did take it. I deleted it and never posted it anywhere.
Sure. That's very responsible behavior.
Right.
Now, it's also responsible. It would have been more responsible to post it and point out what not to do. So that's a different thing.
Yeah. And the other thing is with kids, here's my take on kids, because I definitely feel differently about, you know, adults versus kid. If there's a recognizable adult in the background of a photo that I've taken, so oftentimes you try to blur it out or whatnot, but if there's a recognizable adult in the background and I still like the photo, I'm going to keep that photo and not worry too much about it. But if there is a very in focus, someone else's kid in the background, I almost always delete that. I don't even keep it. I definitely don't post it. So I have a different feeling about, you know, other people's children in the photos. And that's kind of because, again, I sort of am protective of my own kids and I don't really love or like at all when other people are photographing my kids in public. I feel like that's one of those things that they should be asking permission for. But if I'm included in the background, could care less.
Sure. Kind of a double standard that's understandable.
Right.
Ultimately, for me, I feel like times have changed from 20 years ago or plus whatever. Like in the 70s, this obviously wasn't an issue. Nobody cared. Like if his camera was out, nobody even noticed you had a camera, you know? It's, who cared at the park? But the reality is that the internet and the dark net, you know, if that's, is that a thing? That sounds like it should be a
sure
thing.
Sure, yeah.
And the whole digital photography, they have changed the landscape of society. And never mind the dark net, if that even really exists. Like, what about Facebook, like you said? Like that is out, right out in the open. But things have changed so much, but now we have to adapt to that.
Right.
So can you go and just behave how you did before? No. Although, you know, at the price of film, you probably weren't just randomly photographing strangers. Maybe if you're a quote-unquote street photographer.
Yeah.
But the bulk of society wasn't just walking around shooting pictures of strangers with a long lens. It wasn't happening. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, that being said, how many, what percentage of photographers are pedophiles?
It's not really what it's about.
No, but I'm asking you honestly. Yeah, yeah. But for me, but that's, I think for most people, that's kind of the big thing. Like you don't really want pedophiles taking pictures of your kids. I'm sorry.
True.
I'm sorry to take such a controversial stand on that.
Yeah, I didn't know that's where going, and that's not really whatever enters my mind when someone's taking the photo of my kid. Like that's really not where my head is going.
So what is it then? What is it? What would upset you? I mean,
to be honest, if they took it from far away, I'm okay with it. It's the taking it up close where it's an invasion of your space. Like that's just it. That doesn't
sound like a photography issue. That sounds like a space. Like if they didn't even have a camera, it would be weird. It would be even weirder.
Yes,
probably.
Absolutely be weird. So no, I'm okay about somebody. Here's the thing. And this is the photo snob in me. If they took a really good picture of my kid and posted it, I'd be okay with it.
Okay.
So there's where the lines get even blurrier.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's the space thing, number one, getting up in your face. It's the invasion of space. So that's big for me. Mm-hmm. And it's the invasion of space plus crappy photos and posting of my kid. I want to have quality control here. So.
Okay, that's... It's a whole different issue.
Yeah, so...
But I think one of the main issues, one of the main things that people get involved in is just why... Like, first of all, why would you hang around the park shooting long-lens pictures of people that aren't your kids?
Yeah, that's a
why
bit
would
weird.
You do that? Like, there's
creepy.
No reason for that.
Yeah, it's creepy.
And that is... That borders on pedophile. You know, and that, I think, is where the point is, where people get pretty creeped out. But how many photographers do you think, and I would say it's probably the same cross-section of society in general, how many people are pedophiles?
I don't 50%? Know.
No, it's very, very small. And it's such a small number of people who are actually probably pedophiles, yet we are all held to that same low standard of a pedophile. Nobody can take pictures in the park because of this pedophile. It's a lot of saying pedophile on a photo podcast,
yeah,
I know.
Wow, I'm uncomfortable just listening to it.
As am I. It does make me uncomfortable, but you think about it, like if you go surfing in Australia,
right,
the chances of you getting eaten by a shark are so low. It would suck, though. It would be if you were the one. Because it's one or two a year, essentially. Okay. And I've surfed in Australia, and I've been there. I've been there when there was a shark attack. Not where I was. It was on other part of the country. But I was like, okay, and I was surfing, you know, in the evening when, and point being, I saw lots of shapes. I was scared, you know, like, holy cow. But the chances of getting eaten by a shark are pretty low. Now, greater if you're in the water, of course.
Right.
The chances of a pedophile coming up and taking long lens pictures of your kid they're pretty much zero. Yet we have to have a blanket policy. I have to basically be treated as if I'm a pedophile.
But
that
really
stinks.
See, I don't think that that's really what it's all about. I understand that maybe
it
that
is
that,
about. Yes.
But I do think that that's what for some people that's what it's about. I don't think that's what it's about for a large majority of people.
But
it's just the
rules are in place because of that.
Maybe. I think again it's just people, you know, have a and again, this is a Western society thing. Definitely, we're accustomed to more space than the rest of the world. I'd say North America more so probably than anywhere else in the world. We love our space. And so as soon as there's any kind of invasion of our privacy or space, we get pretty antsy about that. And so,
okay.
Yeah. So even like, and again, someone who's hanging around with the long lens and aiming it directly at us, even though they might not be physically within 8 feet of us, to us, that's a bit intimidating. And it is in its own way an invasion of space. Now, if that person was, you know, 200 meters away, I don't think we'd have a problem with it for the most part. And again, and there's a different blurry line between children and adults. But still, I don't want somebody 10 feet away from me just with a long lens aiming their camera at me. That to me, that's weird.
Okay. But what if they're 10 feet away with their 70 to 200 aiming their camera at their own kid?
I'm fine with it.
Exactly. But this blanket statement is saying that no, nobody can do any of this because of that one pedophile who does misbehave. There are these people who do misbehave.
Yes.
And whether it's a personal space or whether it is full-on pedophile stuff, I'll stop saying it. we none of us can do it now, technically. Now, of course, it's not going to be enforced, but this has happened to me, to me and my dad. We were in Canada, and we went. I'll just say the pool because I disagree with their policy. It was the South Delta Rec Center.
Okay.
We'd gone swimming there. My wife and I and we took our daughter before we had our son. So it was the three of us. She was whatever she was, 6 months old. We're taking her to the pool, and it's a very nice pool. Okay. My dad was coming along. He didn't want to swim, so I said, "Hey, here, great. You take my camera. Take the 70 to 200. Get some nice shots of us." Now, the issue is in that situation, he had to be kind of far away because he couldn't just walk out into the pool. So he's in the other room, the whole glass room, and he's shooting photos of my daughter and I in the pool. A very nice moment. The pool is relatively empty. There are other people there, but he's not shooting them.
Right.
No, the lifeguard comes up to him and basically, I see the lifeguard. She starts talking to him on the other side of the glass, and he points at me. I look up at her at eye contact, get eye contact, give her the wave and the thumbs up, like, yep, that's my dad. He's taking pictures of us. The end. Nope. We have a blanket policy. No photography allowed here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, again, you're right in that respect, in that there are circumstances where, you know, one bad apple spoils it.
Absolutely. And the situation now I think my dad didn't handle it very well. He got really pissy and put the camera, well, fine, I'll put the camera away then. So, well, then, of course, now we have no picture. So who wins here?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're not wrong. You're not the P word that we said. You're not behaving badly. You're not invading anybody's space. You're not shooting anybody else. You have my consent. Why? And he said, well, what would you have done? I said, well, I would just keep shooting. Phone the police then. I don't care. This is stupid. I'm not going to sit and argue over something so stupid. If you want to phone the police and escalate this, go ahead. I'm willing to go to the mat for this because I'm not behaving. I'm not misbehaving.
Right.
Yeah. I'm behaving responsibly. I take personal responsibility. And in fact, where the responsibility becomes a global thing, it is our responsibility as citizens to exercise that quote-unquote right. It's not a right, it's a privilege. I don't believe in those kinds of rights. It's a privilege. But if we don't exercise it, they take it away. And they should take it away. if you if that's the way you behave, they're going to just take it away from you. Now, if you get up on their face, well, I have the right to do this, I'm not listening to you either. That's just a stupid argument.
Right.
Where the responsibility also comes in is if I see some guy misbehaving, I have to out him. As a behavior, I have to point out the misbehavior and say, that is not acceptable. Stop doing that. You're ruining it for everybody. And that goes across all of society.
You're a whistleblower.
Not a whistleblower. I'm an alienator. No, but think about this.
Hey, you're pretty excited.
If you found out that I beat my wife.
Right.
Like, oh, wow. You know, just, yeah, Alan, he beats up his wife. What would you do? Would it just be business as usual? Yeah, come over and hang out with my kids. Ah, don't worry about it. He's not a kid beater. He's a wife beater. No, as a responsible member of society, you would shame me. You would ostracize me and I would be out. You wouldn't be doing the podcast anymore and you wouldn't want me hanging. You wouldn't invite me over for dinner. You'd tell me to hit the bricks.
Right.
And so you should. And I would do the same to you. Because that's unacceptable behavior, and it's on us. The responsibility is on us to deal with it. Not lawmakers. Not. I shouldn't tell the premier, well, you should make better laws. Why? What's that going to do? Or make right. a bunch of public service announcements saying, you know, you really shouldn't beat your wife. Oh, good. I was about to beat my wife until I saw that. Thankfully, you mentioned it.
Right.
Now, stupid.
So now where do you fall on, okay... Yeah, you kind of know, you know, somebody who's not in your direct circle of friends, but it's sort of an acquaintance, and they're beating their wife. Then what do you do? Are you calling the police then?
Interesting dilemma. Because to me, this isn't about the police. This is more about... I picked
responsibility.
That
you have responsibility, well, yeah.
Yeah, where does my responsibility lie? I'm not sure. I picked a pretty extreme example, and now I'm kind of caught like in flypaper.
Well, because like I say, now in the photography, no, I don't know anybody, but I'm just saying in the photography world, you know, are you now, where's your responsibility to the person who is not acting in their own responsible way? So
okay. You're at the pool and some guy's taking pictures of some other kids that aren't your kids. He's not directly affecting you, but you see him taking inappropriate pictures of other people's kids. What do you do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm going to confront him. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows exactly what's going on. I'm not going to sit there and go, "Well, it's not my kid, don't worry about it."
But like you say in your dad's example, there's pretty likely a perfectly simple explanation to it. He's you know, he's with the birthday party or something, and he's, you know, those kids and those kids and those kids. And like I say, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm sort of looking on the bright side of all of this, and I'm thinking, oh, there's an example. I'm not confronting strangers. There's got to be a reason that he's doing that, because people don't just do that for nothing. You know what I mean?
I think so, too. But yet they did. But she came over and said, you know, even though I gave a thumbs up and I said, well, people are uncomfortable. Nobody's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
No one's uncomfortable. And it extended even further than that. Like, to do a different incident at the exact same pool with a point and shoot that was actually in the pool, not from far back. The exact same thing was, hey, listen, you know, there's no cameras allowed. So that's not a thing. That's not a thing.
And I think the policies too partly come from, you know, people's own sort of self-consciousness or inadequacies, because the same reason could be that, you know, there's a bunch of people that aren't comfortable with their bodies and they're at the pool and they don't want to be in photographs, and they could be the ones that have sort of stopped it for anybody, right? And the blanket policy could be, hey, there was somebody who complained really badly that they were in photos that showed up on somebody's, you know, basically Facebook page or whatever.
But that's not behaving responsibly, though. I don't do that.
Right, but I'm just saying it doesn't even have to be that. That was just an example. But bottom line is, it doesn't have to be anything more than just somebody who doesn't like their photo taken. And that.
So how do you start that conversation? Hey, I like chips, so no cameras. How does that go? How do you be that guy? Listen, I sit-ups are, they are exhausting. I'm not going to do them. So if you could just point your camera, just leave it. Just smash your camera. Take a rock and smash your camera, and I'll feel better about myself.
It's a circular argument that I don't think anybody ever wins. And so
I just want it.
I think policies have been put in place that nobody follows anyways. And like I say, read that article for anybody who wants to, you know, sort of have an opinion. I mean, you can have an opinion without reading it, but read the article, and it really basically says, you know, there are some sort of guidelines in place. They've been there since 2001, I think it said in the article.
Right.
Nobody even knew that they were there. So that's 14 years of being there.
You're right. But this is one incident that I found interesting because of that. But you go a lot of places. You go to London, and man, there's this quote unquote war on photographers, and it is crazy. I've been to London a few times, and I've never had an issue because I behave responsibly is the thing, and they tend to just kind of let it go. I have taken some pictures and been told later, hey, you're not supposed to take pictures in the subway, in the tube stations.
Right.
You're not supposed to do that, which I think is absurd because they're beautiful. They are amazing. Like, if you ever go to London, definitely take ride the tube and take pictures down there. You're not supposed to, and you'll get in big trouble. Do it anyways. I love it down there. It is amazing. Don't take pictures of people. I mean, take pictures of people in general, like crowds, fine. Like, I have no issue with that. I think that's responsible behavior.
Should I
do you want to get
that?
Is that the police? Hey, a lot of pedophile talk this week, guys. Maybe you're really overcompensating. Okay.
See if they leave a message. That'd be awesome. Yeah,
that would be great. Yeah, it's the RCMP. Yeah. We got an incident at the South Delta Rec Center.
The best part is, like, the phone's never in my room where I'm podcasting, and right now, like, I just can't get away from it.
No. Bottom line for me is
telemarketers.
I behave responsibly. I take my camera here in Germany. I take my camera to the pool. We have a nice pool, the big kiddie pool with like these three pool complex kind of thing. There's tons of people here. And I have a long lens, but I'm walking around. It's very clear. The relationship between me and my daughter or me and my son is very clear that they belong to me. And I'm taking pictures of them. And if people get in the background are in focus, I don't really care. I try not to. My ideal situation is they're not there. That would be just in life. That's actually my ideal situation. But in the photo, that's if there's two photos, one they're in the background, one they're not. Boom! I pick the one that they're not. No, hands down.
Right.
But if my kid does some kick-ass backflip and there's some other kid, you know, who is, you know, way too overweight in the background, hey, tough break. That's how it goes. I wasn't shooting that. Move on with your life. And I feel the same way and the opposite with my kids. Don't shoot my kids. However, if they're in the background with your kids, I'm not going to complain about it. We're living our life here, man.
Mm-hmm. I agree. 100%.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I usually find that the people who yell the loudest about their rights are the ones who have no idea about their responsibilities.
That's
what I find in life.
I agree. Did you get that off your chest?
No, it wasn't really on my chest. It has been for a long time. There's such a fine line between someone who behaves sort of logically and somebody who just goes out of their way to be anti-authoritarian.
Right.
I'm not anti-authoritarian, but I behave with common sense. That doesn't make all rules stupid. Most rules are pretty good. They're based on common sense. Like, there's probably a rule where you don't eat yellow snow. That's just common sense.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Live by your own common sense. Don't hurt other people. Take responsibility for your actions, and your rights won't come into play.
Hear,
that's
hear.
That's my issue. That's my decree thus forth. If you want to take pictures at the pool, take pictures at the pool. Get arrested. All right.
Okay.
Talk hard.
Yes.
Pump up the volume right there.
Amazon.
And when you post your bail, post it through Amazon on our site. That's all I'm saying to you. Because we had a kickback on that.
Yes.
Next week's challenge.
I got one. No, buy no, a two hosers one. T-shirt.
Yes, that's a
challenge. That's
a challenge.
I post it. No, you know what? Both my kids... Yeah. Wore their two hoser shirts today because it's Valentine's Day at the school.
Oh.
And the red and white two hosers. So nice. It's probably too late to get them now for Valentine's Day for your yeah. loved ones. But we should have said that last week.
We had a post. I had a post that we were included in Facebook. One of our listeners said, hey, Paul said, for everyone at the photo walk who was asking me, my shirt was the two hosers. Check these guys out.
Beautiful. It's advertising.
Yes. And he was wearing it. I'm thrilled that like that to me is so, especially since we're going to lose most of our listeners after my rant this week. I how flattering is it? Like it's wickedly flattering for me that somebody would A, buy the shirt and B, then specifically wear it to a photo walk. That's just
it's like buying the AC/DC t-shirt and wearing it to the next concert tour.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure we're going to get a whole bunch of new kids from my daughter's grade 2 class signing up for our Facebook after she wears it today. So,
oh, no question.
So we should get a big spike in the kids two hosers t-shirt sales.
Just so you know, if I hear from Bon Scott before next week, you're out.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to go with the new co-host.
Okay.
Yeah, I think pretty sure he's dead.
Oh.
So I think you're safe.
Okay. I was it was an easy out for me.
Next week's challenge, negative space.
Negative space. Okay.
Nothing to do with the negative rant I just did, because I feel like mine was a positive, life-affirming rant.
Right.
That'll make your life better if you follow it.
Yeah.
But, no, we're going to have Amber on the show, and she issued the challenge of negative space, so we're going to do that into next week's show.
So if I were to somehow get a picture of you in your living room, would that count?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm a very positive individual.
Okay.
Yep. So there you go. Websites, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca. Keep like signing up for Lightroom, keep meaning to update that. So maybe mm-hmm. I'll get around to that this weekend too. And Two Hosers Facebook.
Hey, listen, so. if you come across somebody's website mm-hmm. and it's just constantly updated, every week they're updating it, it means they're not working very much.
That's probably a good point. Good point. Yeah. Good point. But I should update it at some point.
Every 6 months. I haven't done mine in a long time either. Probably at least 8 months, maybe a year. I don't know. It's 8 months. I'd say 8 months.
I think I might want to put one of the headshots because that's something different that I don't have a single shot showing that is in my repertoire.
All right. Check it out.
But I will not include my Harlem Globetrotters panning shot on the website.
Let's do it. I'm going to include it on ours. So you can find my stuff at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com where you can find the links to everything we just talked about. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.